This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
The night sky for December 2016. Well, we have some lovely long nights now, so there's lots to see. And in the evening, you can't help notice Venus dominating the western sky. And if you're up reasonably early in the morning, you can't help but see Jupiter becoming higher. And by the end of the month, it'll be basically due south after sunset, so it'll be easy to see. So what about the stars? Well, looking south after sunset, when it gets dark, there's not obvious to see. In fact, you have the square of Pegasus, the winged horse, upside down. Up to its left is the constellation Andromeda, which of course includes the Great Nebula in Andromeda M31. Above that is the W-shaped constellation of Cassiopeia. And one way to find Andromeda is to take the rightmost V, the right-hand side of the W, and use that as an arrow. And if you take some binoculars on a dark night and gradually work downwards, you should see a little fuzzy glow, which is the Andromeda galaxy. As the evening draws on, things become a bit more exciting. First of all, you'll see Taurus rising in the southeast with that lovely open cluster of the Pleiades, highest in the sky. Below that to the left is the Hyades cluster, with the bright star Aldebaran, not part of the cluster, but about halfway between ourselves and the Hyades cluster itself. And then, as the evening draws on, Orion will appear over in the east, the lovely constellation. The three stars of Orion's belt are pointers. They point upwards to the Hyades and the Pleiades, and down to the left to the brightest star we have in our northern constellations, Sirius. Over to the left and upper left of Orion, we have Castor and Pollux, the two brightest stars of the heavenly twins. And then working around a bit, fairly high up, there'll be a bright yellow star, which is Capella, which is in Auriga. The Milky Way passes through Auriga, and there are quite a number of open clusters that you can see, in fact, with binoculars on a clear, dark night. Well, what about the planets? Well, actually, I've been seeing Jupiter fairly high now in the southeast as I get up at about 6:30 to 7 in the morning. You can't really fail to see it. It's lying in Virgo. It rises at about 2:30 UT at the start of December, but about 1 o'clock UT by its end. During the month, its magnitude rises a little bit from minus 1.8 to minus 1.9 magnitudes. And at the same time, of course, the angular size is increasing from 31 to 35 arc seconds. By the end of December, it will reach the meridian, that's due south, by dawn, with an elevation of 35 degrees. Sadly, each year, that maximum elevation is getting less as Jupiter follows Saturn down towards the lower part of the ecliptic. So early risers should be able to observe the equatorial bands and up to four of the Galilean satellites as they weave their way around it. But what about Saturn? It passes behind the Sun on the 10th of December, so cannot be seen for much of the month. However, by about Christmas Day, it will rise about an hour before the Sun and may just be seen in the brightening dawn at a magnitude of plus 0.5. You may well need binoculars to spot Saturn lying to the southeast and to the left of Antares in Scorpius. But of course, please do not use binoculars after the sun has risen. Now Mercury reaches its greatest elongation east, that's to the left of the sun, on the 10th of December, and may be spotted low in the southwest for the first 2 weeks of the month. Its angular size is increasing from 5.5 arc seconds at the start of the month to 7 arc seconds by the 10th. At the same time, its gibbous phase falls from 68 to 56% illuminated. It reaches magnitude 0 on the 17th, but it's been moving back down towards the sun, and so will be lost in the sun's glare by about the 19th or so. As it moves to inferior conjunction, that's between the sun and the earth, on the 28th. Well, Mars has been around for a very long time. It will be seen low in the south after sunset. It dims from magnitude plus 0.6 to plus 0.9 during the month as it moves eastwards into Aquarius from Capricornus on the 16th. Its disk is now only about 6 arc seconds across, so you can't really expect to see any details on what I think is a salmon pink disk rather than red. Now Venus is becoming increasingly obvious, visible now in the southwest after sunset, setting about 3 hours after the sun at the start of December, but increasing to about 4 hours after the sun by month's end. It's moving rapidly eastwards from Sagittarius into Capricornus, that's on the 7th, and brightens from magnitude minus 4.2 to minus 4.4, whilst its angular diameter increases from 17 to 22 arc seconds. Now at the same time, the illuminated area of the disk falls from 68 to 56%. So the two things compensate, and that's why Venus's brightness stays pretty constant at around the 4.2 mark for almost all the time it's actually visible in the sky. Finally, what about some highlights? Well, on December the 3rd, should it be clear after sunset, you may be able to spot Venus below a thin crescent moon. Whenever there's a very thin crescent moon, and if the Earth is fairly cloudy, you have a chance of spotting what's called Earthshine, the old moon in the new moon's arms. And that's really rather nice thing to see. So Venus will be at magnitude minus 4.2. On December the 4th, after sunset, you can see Venus, Mars, and a crescent moon together, looking low in the south-southwest. Obviously, a day later, the crescent won't be quite so thin. Now, a nice one. On December the 13th, before dawn, the moon occults Aldebaran in the Hyades cluster. So during the night of the 12th, 13th of December, the full moon will pass through the Hyades cluster and actually occult many of its stars. And at around 6:15 UT, it will occult minus 0.7 magnitude Aldebaran, which, as I've said before, lies between us and the cluster. Now, it's right at the very edge of the lunar disk, so it could well be what's called a grazing occultation from parts of the UK, and may not even be occulted at all from some. Well, we have two meteor showers this month. December the 14th and 15th after midnight, we have the Geminids, or the Geminid meteor shower. And in fact, that's become probably one of the most reliable in recent years. It always used to be the Perseids in August, but now the Geminids tend to be better. And I saw an absolute wonderful display last year, in fact, on board ship in the ocean not far from Brazil. Sadly, this is not a good year for the two nights when the peak of the Geminids occurs, simply because it's very close to full moon and the fainter meteors will not be seen. However, as I saw last year, the Geminids can often produce what are near fireballs, perhaps not quite a fireball, but pretty damn bright. And in fact, it's therefore still worth observing. You'll certainly see those if they happen. Obviously, an observing location well away from towns or cities will pay dividends. The relatively slow-moving meteors arise from debris released from the asteroid 3200 Phaeton. This is unusual, as most meteor showers come from comets, and the radiant, which is where the meteors appear to come from, is close to the bright star Castor in the constellation of Gemini. And on the night sky page, put in night sky Jodrell Bank, there'll be a chart showing you where the radiant is. Obviously, if it's clear, it'll be cold, so wear a woolly hat, wrap up well, and perhaps have some hot drinks with you. December the 22nd and 23rd, in the late evenings, we have the Ursid meteor shower, and that implies the radiant lies in the constellation of Ursa Major. It's actually close to the star Kokab, in Ursa Minor. So look northwards at high elevation. Occasionally there can be a higher rate than the typical 10 to 15 meteors per hour, which isn't really all that much. But pleasingly, the moon will not affect our view until really the early hours of the early morning. So you have a chance at least of seeing some of them in the hours up to and beyond midnight. On December the 30th, the night of the 30th, 31st, after sunset, Venus closes on Mars. In fact, Venus has been catching Mars up in the sky, and it's closest this month, as you might expect, on the 31st. So have a look either on the 30th or 31st, and you should see Mars in Aquarius to the upper right of Venus, both of them fairly low in the south-southwest. Finally, the Alpine Valley on the Moon. I do like observing and imaging the Moon. It's an easy thing to image because it's so bright. Those two nights, the 6th and the 20th, are good nights to observe what is called the Alpine Valley if you have a small telescope. It lies close to the limb on those two nights, and it's a little cleft within the Apennine mountain chain that marks the edge of Mare Imbrium. It's about 7 miles wide and 79 miles long. A thin rill actually runs through its length, which is really quite a challenge to observe, and I can't claim ever to have seen or photographed it. So over the next two nights, following the 6th, as the terminator moves round towards full, you can see the dark crater Plato and the young crater Copernicus in view. And also, around the top, just round to the left of Plato, a rather lovely region called Sinus Iridum. In fact, not Sinus Iridium, it's Sinus Iridum, the Bay of Rainbows. And when the terminator crosses the bay, the mountains on the left-hand side are lit up. They look a little bit like the backbone of a dinosaur. So let's hope we have some nice nights to observe the heavens during December. And of course, Happy Christmas and New Year.
And thanks for that, Ian. And for our Antipodean listeners, here's Claire Bretherton with the night sky where you are.
Kia ora, and welcome to the December Jodcast from Space Place at Carter Observatory in Wellington, New Zealand. After a bit of a cold, wet, windy and somewhat shaky November, we're finally moving into our summer months as we head towards the Southern Hemisphere summer solstice on the 21st of December. Our eastern evening sky is now dominated by our summer constellations of Taurus, Orion and his two dogs, Canis Major and Canis Minor. The summer Milky Way stretches through these constellations and along our southern horizon. Although not as bright as our winter Milky Way, we can still pick out the mottled glow of bright and dark regions when observed from a dark location. The bright regions are the combined light of the many distant stars that form our galaxy, whilst the dark patches are clouds of interstellar gas and dust that block the light from more distant stars. Throughout this region there are many star clusters and nebulae that can be observed with binoculars and small telescopes, and some that can even be seen with the naked eye. We'll take a look at some of the best examples in our Jodcast this month. We'll start our tour in Orion, sitting high in the east after dark. In Greek mythology, Orion is a hunter and the arch-enemy of our winter constellation, Scorpius. The two continually chase each other around the sky. As Orion rises in the east to dominate our summer skies, Scorpius sinks down below the western horizon. Orion lies along the celestial equator and can be seen at least partially throughout the world. As he was invented in the northern hemisphere, in New Zealand we see him upside down. Orion is easy to find by the three bright stars that form his belt. Here in Aotearoa we call these Tautoru, meaning line of three. Above Orion's belt is a line of faint stars which form Orion's sword in the northern hemisphere. For those of us in the southern hemisphere, we see the belt and sword instead as a pot or saucepan. At the top left of the constellation is the bright blue-white supergiant Rigel. Whilst Rigel has been given the designation Beta Orionis, it is in fact normally the brightest star in the constellation, and the seventh brightest in the night sky. In contrast to the blue of Rigel, at the bottom right of Orion is the red supergiant Betelgeuse Alpha Orionis, the second brightest star in the constellation. Betelgeuse is a star that's coming towards the end of its life. As it runs out of fuel to burn, it has bloated out and cooled down, giving it its wonderful red hue. Estimates of the mass of Betelgeuse range from around 8 to 20 times that of the Sun. And if it were placed at the center of the solar system, its surface would reach out almost as far as the orbit of Jupiter. One day soon, Betelgeuse is going to end its life in a supernova. Of course, soon to astronomers could be a million years or more. But if it does go bang within our lifetimes, it's sure to be a spectacular sight. Perhaps becoming so bright you could see it in the daytime. At a distance of over 600 light years, it is possible that this explosion has already happened, and we're just waiting for the light to reach us. Orion contains a number of interesting objects to observe with both the naked eye and binoculars or telescopes. If you look carefully, you may see the middle star of Orion's sword has a fuzzy appearance. This is the Great Nebula in Orion, or M42. The Orion Nebula is a stellar nursery, a huge cloud of gas and dust in which new stars are being born. At around 1,344 light-years away, M42 is the closest massive star formation region to the Earth, with around 700 stars in various stages of the star formation process. In the heart of the Orion Nebula is a small group of bright stars known as the Trapezium Cluster. The ultraviolet radiation from these stars is lighting up the surrounding gas. Whilst easily spotted with the naked eye, through binoculars or a small telescope, the nebula is a wonderful sight. Take your time and you should be able to clearly see some of the nebulosity of M42 and the bright star cluster that lights it up. Another nebula in Orion that is well worth a look is the Reflection Nebula M78, easily found as a hazy patch in a small telescope. With a larger telescope, the famous Horsehead Nebula, silhouetted against the Emission Nebula IC434, is a lovely sight, just to the south of the star Alnitak, the easternmost star in Orion's belt. Its proximity to bright Alnitak makes viewing the Horsehead Nebula more challenging, but long exposure photographs will reveal much more detail. Alnitak is actually a multiple star system. The ultraviolet radiation from this star is illuminating a cloud of dust and gas, creating NGC 2024, the Flame Nebula. M42, M78, IC434 and NGC 2024 are all part of the Orion Molecular Cloud Complex, a vast area of young stars, bright nebulae and dark clouds spreading all the way from Orion's belt to his sword and covering several degrees in the sky. Following Orion's belt to the left, we come to an upturned V-shape of stars marking the head of Taurus the Bull. At the bottom of this V is the bright orange star Aldebaran at around 65 light-years away, representing the Eye of the Bull. The other stars in the V are part of the more distant Hyades cluster. At 153 light-years away, the Hyades is the closest and one of the best-studied open clusters to Earth. It is estimated to be around 625 million years old. Over time, the cluster will continue to spread out and disperse into space, with some of the largest and brightest members already coming towards the ends of their lives. Near to the fainter of the two horns of Taurus, and just about visible in binoculars under excellent conditions, is the Crab Nebula. First discovered by English astronomer John Bevis in 1731, the Crab Nebula is a supernova remnant now believed to be associated with supernova SN1054, observed and recorded by Chinese astronomers in 1054 AD. Continuing further around the sky, you come to another famous open cluster, the Pleiades, or M45, at a distance of 444 light-years away. This group of stars is even younger than the Hyades, and is dominated by a number of hot, massive blue stars, only around 100 million years old. The Pleiades has many different names in many different cultures, but here in New Zealand it is best known as Matariki, meaning Little Eyes, or Eyes of God. The rising of this group of stars for the first time before the sun, around June each year, marks the coming of the Maori New Year. Following Orion's belt to the right, you come to Sirius, or Takarua, the brightest star in our nighttime sky, and in the constellation of Canis Major, Orion's large hunting dog. Canis Minor, the small dog, is a little below, close to the eastern horizon. Its brightest star, Procyon, is actually a binary star system, consisting of a white main sequence star and a faint white dwarf companion. At just 11.46 light-years away, it is one of the nearest neighbours to our sun. From here, you can follow the band of the Milky Way around the sky, through the False and Diamond crosses to Crux, the Southern Cross, low in the south. Sitting beside the Southern Cross is a dark patch called the Coalsack Nebula, a huge cloud of interstellar gas and dust about 600 light-years away. Known as a dark nebula, the gas and dust in this cloud are blocking the light from more distant stars, obscuring them from our view. To Maori, the Coalsack Nebula is known as Te Pātiki, or the Flounder. In our western skies, we see a trio of planets this month. Mercury is low on the southwestern horizon for the first half of the month, setting around an hour and a half after the sun, before sinking into the evening twilight after the 15th. Venus is higher in the west, the first thing you'll see as the sky begins to darken, and sets close to midnight. Mars is much fainter and to the top right of Venus, moving through Capricorn and into Aquarius over the course of the month. We also have a number of meteor showers happening this month. The Theonisids reach their peak on the 6th of December and are thought to be associated with a comet D1819W1 Blancpain. With the radiant in the constellation of Phoenix not far from Achenar, this shower is well placed for Southern Hemisphere observers throughout the hours of darkness. The Theonisids were first discovered during an outburst in 1956, where approximately 100 meteors an hour were seen from locations across the Southern Hemisphere. However, activity is very uncertain, and rates this year are likely to be much, much lower than this. The minor Papin-Philae meteor shower also reaches its peak at around the same time, with a zenithal hourly rate of around 10. Just a few days later, peaking on the 15th of the month are the Geminids. This is one of the best meteor showers of the year, but we are not well placed for viewing in New Zealand, with the radiant in the constellation of Gemini and well north of the equator. The constellation is at its highest around 3 a.m, but still appears low in our northern sky. Due to this low height, we only see around half of the meteors visible to those in the northern hemisphere, but it's still well worth looking out for. Wishing you clear skies and a Merry Christmas from the team here at Space Place at Carter Observatory.